Gosta de mamar nos peitinhos da cabritinha. Eu gosto de mamar nos peitinhos da cabritinha.
That works, that works. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, no, and you guys are coming from downtown, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Most of the business is downtown?
Yeah, oh, GTA, yeah. Yeah.
You guys, do you like the core? You like working in the core?
It's I live in the core, so yeah. I live right downtown, Kensington Market.
Okay.
So... It's
a lot of masonry work needed in Kensington Market.
We don't do just masonry
work. No, you do all kinds of construction.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah. A lot of
work in Kensington Market.
Yes, yes.
No doubt.
But we do a lot of work in East York as well.
Yeah.
Old houses. There's a big market there for us. We have a good platform there now, like a long, satisfying customers there. Like
yeah.
We start... in East York a few years back with a big clinic, and from there it just exploded. And
how do you guys know each other?
Family.
Family. Almost.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah?
Family.
Yeah. Like, it's been many years.
My side of the family was married to his side of the family, and I ended up meeting his father when I was back home.
Yep.
Then when I came here 20 years ago, he came to work for his father, and, you know.
And then it's funny that off mic just before we got started... our families are from the same town back in the Azores, right?
Yeah.
Which is like, it's such a small world, right?
Very small world.
Portuguese and Canadian construction.
8,000 kilometers away, and, you know, here we are.
It's too funny. When was the last time you were there?
In Azores?
Yeah.
2000.
Last time for me was 2019.
I was there 2000 because my mom doesn't live there anymore.
Okay.
My mom lives in France, so I go to France.
What part of France?
Nantes. So it's the... just 400 kilometers northwest of Paris, about 150 north of Bordeaux.
Okay, yeah.
So it's close to the Canal de Mancha. You know where the tunnel for Britain is?
Yeah.
More or less around that
area. Yeah, around that. So closer to the coast then?
Yeah, relatively
pretty close to the coast.
So about 20 kilometers from the coast.
Yeah.
There's a city, I can't remember the name, where they built the Queen Mary to.
Okay.
Naval ship there. They actually went there to do installation in the ship, my brother and my stepfather. And then they decided to move to France.
Wow. And then, Chris, your heritage is back in the mainland in Portugal.
Yeah.
Yeah. What part there?
Near Fatima.
Oh.
Yeah, very close.
Yeah.
To the Holy Land.
And now you guys are, well, you started off as masonry or no? You started off as construction?
Yeah, masonry. Yeah.
Masonry first, right?
Started off on masonry. You know, with the subdivisions, the classic, kind of got into the custom
homes. Get your feet wet.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Work in the mud a little bit, you know.
Well, your feet full of mud.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And a little bit of respect for it. I think it's a good place to start, for sure.
You learn a lot.
Absolutely.
You learn what not to do a lot. But, well, welcome to the show, guys. Let me share the information. So, Pinate Construction.gta is, you can find them on Instagram that way. And then also www.pinante construction.com and also info at Pinate Construction. And then I'm wearing Tim's hoodie, RVC, Ravine View Construction. And then I'm going to go to the airport to do some traffic control because a lot of guys are doing these bright ones, right? So, are you looking for a sustainable and durable real wood solution to elevate your next project? Let me introduce you to the gold standard. Thermery, the world's largest and most trusted manufacturer of thermally modified wood and sauna materials. Their wood is like the superhero version of regular wood, stronger, more stable, and ready to take on whatever Mother Nature throws its way. With a wide range of thermally modified wood products from decking and cladding to sauna and statement walls, when you choose Thermery, you're not just investing in quality, you're investing in the health of our planet too. Join countless architects, designers, builders, and homeowners who have trusted Thermery to bring their vision to life. The best way to fully experience the Thermery difference is to hold the real thing in your hands. So visit their website today at www.thermeryusa.com and also find them on IG at ThermeryUSA. Contractors, it's time to empower your business with Shelta Tech implementation. Shelta is offering a free meeting to tackle your biggest pain points head on. Their goal, to develop a custom company app that's built just for you, solving your pain points, streamlining your processes, making your workday smoother. Here's the scoop. There's a $15,000 digital adoption grant available, and Shelta is an expert at helping you secure it. This isn't just funding, it's your stepping stone into a new era of digital efficiency. By your second meeting, you'll get a tailor-made company playbook, a software prototype designed with your input, project tracking, real-time budget management, and daily logs, all integrated into a single app. It's tech that works for you, not the other way around. Shelta isn't just offering tech, they're offering transformation. Join the community of 93 subcontractors who have already stepped up their game with Shelta Tech. Two meetings, countless opportunities, ready to make a move? Visit shelta.app. Let's pave the way to smarter, tech-driven future. Shelta Technology, custom tech solutions for the modern contractor. High-Tech Concrete Cutting is a leading provider for all concrete scanning, x-ray, cutting, and coring throughout Ontario. They pride themselves in providing highest quality service in a safe manner, on time, and on budget. With the background, knowledge, and support of more than 30 years' experience from the owner Dan St. Ange, there is no job that they cannot quote or complete. Their fleet is equipped with top-of-the-line trucks and equipment, which eliminates any uncertainty for downtime and allows our highly skilled crews to complete your project without delays. Choose High-Tech Concrete Cutting for your next project and see the difference when dealing with the industry leaders. Find them at www.hightechcutting.ca and on Instagram at hightechconcretecutting. Time to sign up for Phil, the free construction marketplace and load tracking app for developers, engineers, and all contractors working in the civil construction industry. One other thing to mention is business and facility listings. Phil has the most complete database of quarries, pits, plants, and depots in Ontario, including all of the big names. So if you're looking for concrete, stone, asphalt, whatever, you'll be able to find it. You can also add your business listing or claim it. It might already be on the map. Sign up for free on the website at www.getphil.app. That's www.getphil.app. You can also search Phil in the App Store. Construction pros, brace yourselves for a revolutionary experience. HTGNA, your ultimate destination for state-of-the-art concrete floor preparation equipment, is about to change the game. Our motto, surface preparation is not just a task, it's our expertise, and your satisfaction is a guarantee. HTGNA isn't your average, it's a commitment. Our line of concrete floor preparation equipment stands tall as the epitome of industry excellence. Ready to take your projects to the next level? Dive into htgnorthamerica.com for a glimpse of innovation. Lock in a demo now and immerse yourself in the HTGNA experience. HTG North America, surface preparation equipment is our expertise, your satisfaction, our guarantee.
How long have you guys been in the game though?
10 years.
10 years, eh? How young are you guys?
I'm 43.
I'm late 20s.
How do you 43 with no gray? I don't understand this. What's going on? What's your secret?
Good genes.
Is it genes?
Good genes.
Nothing's like bothering you these days?
Oh, a lot of things bother me. but I'm a laid back guy. I try to live one day at a time. No, don't stress if you can't control it.
And that's how you guys work?
Yeah, we...
for the most part.
We try to plan ahead. So our motto is do it right, do it once. You know, take your time, make sure our job is done right. So we always try to make it, do it right. So just take your time.
Yeah.
It's better to spend another half an hour doing a project or a task than, you know, just ruin it and have to go back. And
why is everybody in a hurry? They think they make more money if they finish it faster?
I don't think so. In my point of view, our quality has been spoken for us.
Yep.
And we don't plan to change because, you know, we don't make tons of money. We don't just survive, right? But
you're running a business.
So yeah, we're running a business.
Profitable, right?
Yes, absolutely. It is profitable, of course. Yeah. It has to be, or else we wouldn't be in business. But we focus on quality, not quantity. Our job is...
Was that always the case from day one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
always. That's how I learned. That's surely how he learned.
Because you probably, coming from a subdivision, you probably realize there's a lot of shortcuts happening in here.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, we can't stand with these shortcuts. We can't stand that the quality is not good. And I feel bad when I walk away from this and I'm like, this is how we're leaving it. I don't want to do that when we run a business. That's the
not only that, not only the quality. Like, you get injured workers getting injured. You get... stress levels, like, it's not a good model to be just rushing. So I started 20 years ago as a bricklayer, working for his father. And on the side, his father do renovations as well. That's where I learned most of my renovation skills, was with his father. And when I started learning brick, he took me under his wing, and he said, Carlos, don't rush. Learn to do it right. The speed will come.
That's a good point.
And it works for me, and it's been working for everybody that I've been teaching. So I'm not changing the model. So I'm continuing to live like that because...
I guess the key is having a really good teacher.
Simple as that.
Yeah. Yes.
But you guys are also now hiring and bringing people on board. And how is the teaching of this next generation?
A headache.
It's a headache?
Because most guys want to make lots of money at the beginning.
They don't understand that, like the same philosophy that your dad said.
We try to say, listen, don't rush. The money will come. Try to learn to do it right. Then the speed will
come. Do they just not believe that the money will come, that they need the money today, this week, this month?
I think it's a lack of responsibility, really. Like, they just don't care.
Accountability?
Accountability, responsibility for what you're doing, for the quality of the work that you're doing. Like, it's just a mentality of like, okay, I got to get this done. Let's do it. It doesn't matter if it goes wrong, if it's too far out, if it's too far in, like, let's just go. And then what happens is you come back and it's not done properly. So then it's just a headache, and they have no responsibility for it, right? Like when I started, what I do, I want to do it right, and I try to do it right to avoid not doing it right. And nowadays, I feel like they just don't care. You know, there's no love for what you're doing.
Right? Are they asking like for guidance? Yes.
They ask for guidance, but they don't take it. So I actually, in the last 6 months, I had to lay off a couple of guys because they didn't listen. I, you know, tell them, slow down. Please, slow down. I had two guys that, you know, I just left the site for a couple of minutes to get material. I said, okay, take this slowly. 5 minutes later, they call me, listen, we're holding the bin because the wall fell down. I go, what do you mean the wall fell down? And I get there, because they went sledgehammer to it instead of going slowly with the jackhammer, like I asked to. They went ballistic, tried to do production to show work, so, you know, and end up have to fire them. In another job, they were breaking a washroom, and I told them, listen, start here slowly, piece by piece. There's a water pipe underneath here. I need that to be last slowly. 5 minutes later, I'm out of the side. They go, oh, I punched through the water line. Instead of...
Do they not, like, think? Like, they don't...
That's the problem. They want to show production because they think production is going to give them money. And in my case, I don't pay for production. I pay for quality. I want my guys to show quality work. I don't want them to produce. I'm there to produce. They need to show me quality work, take time, do your job right, because in the end it pays more. Because if I don't have to correct them, if I don't have to redo their job, I'm saving time and money on my part.
Do you guys look at it like it's affecting your business? Like you start to sit down and go, okay, the wall falling down, potential risk of injury,
yes,
puncturing the pipe, added cost, possible flood. Like, are you guys conscious of understanding that You guys are costing more money now. Now, not only do I have to pay you to do the work incorrectly, but I have to consider the fact that it's going to cost me more because of the potential risk associated with doing it wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, of course, absolutely.
And that's the risk that we're kind of going through now, because when we were in the masonry business, it was, this now is more of an image problem, right? An image and the quality that we're trying to show, of course, right? But when we were in masonry, it's literally the problem of having the manpower and keeping it and keeping good manpower is so difficult. And that's why we branched into general renovations, because you don't need as much equipment and as much specialized manpower than in masonry, right? Because masonry, like I'm sure, I don't know if you know, but if a laborer has to know what he's doing to be a good laborer, and mason, the same thing, the forklift driver, like they have to know, otherwise it's a nightmare for everybody.
It doesn't run smooth.
No, exactly. And we have a decent crew right now, but in the last 6 months, I actually went through a few laborers because of they want to make too much money at the beginning and with no experience. and don't want to listen either. And that brings, like you said, it brings problems and affects our image, affects our cost. They break stuff, I have to stop the job, fix it. The job stops, it's not making money, it's losing money.
Yep.
Time is money. But my time well managed, if they just, it's, I think is they want, they need more money, and you know, we can't start paying them.
But here's the question, guys. If you were to pay them more money, would the quality be better and the reduce the amount of risk?
Definitely not.
No.
Because so, the money's not the solution here.
No, the solution is finding responsible guys that are willing to grow. So we found that older people,
yeah,
you know, 35s, 40s, work best for us.
Adults, yeah, with families, yeah,
with roots.
These younger kids are just a headache.
But I mean, how many of these older people in their 30s and 40s are you finding that are not already connected to a company? That's got to be hard. That's got to be even a smaller
amount.
It's
hard. It's yeah. very small amount, and most of them are new immigrants that we are finding.
Okay,
like people that came in the last 2-3 years, but you know, found a few of them responsible, very hardworking people, and like I said, older. The younger kids don't think they just want to. They think everything it's speed. And can't be done like that. Like,
and that's when you don't get the guys that literally don't want to do anything. So there's no speed or knowledge or anything.
So they're just, they're temporary.
Like some,
they're,
yes.
They're not showing initiative. They're not coming up to you guys asking you how this works.
But that's the thing. Even when they show initiative, they do it wrong. It's, we tell them, okay, do this, specifically this.
Yeah.
And this is what I want. We explain. I say, if you don't understand, ask me again. Just don't do it wrong.
Yeah.
I'll explain 2-3 times. I don't care. I want it done right the first time. And, you know, we just did an underpinning, for example. And we had a crew of 6 digging. And one of the guys knew that he was in the risk of going away, because he was already messing up too much. And one day, Chris put him in and said, okay, do this hole. I want this 16 inches by 2 feet by 42. By the time we get back, was 3 feet deep, 4 feet wide, and 3 feet out.
He couldn't find a tape measure?
And the thing is, he already done 3 holes prior to that one. And it said the holes are exactly all the same. They are all the same. They have to have the same measurements, so everything.
What was the reason for
that? That's the thing. I don't understand why he just...
He's not thinking about it.
Yeah,
he just... You want to rush and get it done. So then he's going away and then just being counterproductive.
I know, but that one little task of digging that hole for that one section of underpinning is a small part of the whole plan. And yes. If they don't understand the whole plan... then they're not understanding what the objective is.
But the whole plan is like, that's the thing. I explained the whole plan to everybody.
It's probably his third hole.
Yeah. So this is the thing. The underpinning has to be done in stages.
Of
right?
course.
And this was stage 2 already. So.
And he was already there on first stage?
Oh, yeah. He was there from the beginning.
So he's also part of the, he sees the drawings. The drawings are there. He sees the steps. He sees the inspector. Yeah. He sees the engineer.
So the engineer came. You know, we had the engineer come for the first time. I marked on the wall, you know, with orange paint.
1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3. Yes. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And I said, this is how it's going to be. And I cut the concrete because I didn't take the slab out. I leave the slab. I always like to leave the slab.
It's easier to work. You don't have to work in mud.
Extra support. You know, we have the cement still holding the side of the walls. I like to work like that. So I make the holes, like, perfect. 42, you know. You just have to dig down by the cement. And I don't know, you just...
And we're talking about sand here. Like sand. The sand, like you just touch it with the shovel and it just falls apart. It's not clay. It's not something that you need a jackhammer to be
digging. Did he have his earbuds on and he was just digging?
No, and funny enough, he's a chemical engineer from his...
Back home. How old was he?
32, 33.
Yeah. He knows better.
He knew better. I just don't know. Like, I don't understand why. Like, and like him, guys are younger than that. It's the same thing. Like, they don't understand that it has to be quality, not production. And when we're working in homeowners, if we're in the subdivision, it's a different story.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with the homeowners, noise, dust, everything has to be extra careful.
Cleanliness.
Everything. And this is one thing that I don't take chances. Every time, the first thing they have to do in the morning is cover the floors, make sure if we have to walk in and out of the house, it's covered up, you know, at night, clean it up. That's the first thing. And it's always the
same
thing.
Do they see that? Do they understand why you're doing that?
Yeah, because I explained them. Yeah. And, you know, when we have, like, customers come and and complain or... how you say that word? Elogiar, how you say it in
Portuguese? Compliment.
Compliment mm-hmm. us, like it happens. We transfer that to them. We tell them what happened.
Of course.
So they know, they be aware of they're doing a good or a bad job, not just us, because they're part of the team, right? So we explain that to them. But the young kids doesn't get in their mind. It doesn't get in their mind.
So where do you guys find... I mean, I'm assuming that you have turnover. I'm assuming that you have people come in, people go out, people come in. Where are you looking? Like, where are you? Everybody has this problem. Doesn't matter. It's not just you guys.
Of course.
Everybody has this problem.
Everybody having this problem because it's the guys that we have right now, they actually was other guys that were working for us before that called them in.
Okay.
It was
kind of word of mouth kind of thing.
But
I generally get them off of platforms, online platforms and groups of, I guess, like-minded individuals that are all looking for work kind of thing.
Do they realize that there's lots of work out there?
I honestly don't think there is that much work nowadays in construction as it used to be.
No. I don't want to compare it to the pandemic years. I want to compare it to before the pandemic years. But there's a lot of good work out there because you guys want to expand, and you can only expand if you can find the right team to continue to expand.
Exactly.
You guys are probably reserved on getting someone approach you going, listen, I've got a job coming up 6 months, next year, whatever. But you're reserved saying, we'll take it. Because you don't have the workforce for it.
Yes. So at this moment, for example, I can't leave the job site. So I'm
always... So you can't run a business?
He does that.
Precisely.
But the business would run better if it was like two people looking at possibilities.
Yeah, so if I could have a man that could do the same job as me, I could have two job sites on the run. And at the moment, I can't. I can't afford to have two job sites on
the run.
Too
risk.
It's too much risky and too much hassle for the customers.
Yes.
So what we do now is we start one to finish. And that brings us problems too, because sometimes we do one, two, three jobs in the run, and then it gets, you know, closer to the winter. There's a little stale on the jobs, and then we stop for 3-4 days. The guys run off.
They do, because they need the money right away. I need the money today.
Yes. Yeah. There's a Friday morning. Hey, Carlos, Chris, can I get paid now? Every week.
And that's if we don't get the ones that are advances.
Yes.
I remember my first year of construction, I was doing a job and I was on a cul-de-sac, a street, and I was doing a job, and then there was another crew just down the street doing a much bigger job. They're like a big rental, adding a second floor and whatever. But I got friendly with the GC there, and he used to always tell me he had one of these guys, his name was Rocky. And if he showed up on Mondays, he would work, but like at a fraction of the speed. And then Tuesday, he would work a little faster. And then it got to the point where he got more efficient and worked harder as the week came along because he knew that Friday was payday. So he worked based on how close he got to the paycheck. And then as soon as he got the paycheck, he would just take off And he was big in scratch and lottery and shit like that and try to win. Like, he was always looking for a big payday. And then if he did get some money, did win some money, he would just spend that over the weekend. And then sure enough, the cycle would start all over again with Monday. Come in, if he showed up on Monday. And I was just asking the GC, how do you deal with that? Like, how do you run a business that way? I don't understand how you can think what this week is going to be like, whether or not this guy is going to show up on Monday to begin with.
You can't.
That's just stressful.
And then they don't want to let him go. Most guys don't want to let these guys go because they can't find anything better, they think.
Unfortunately, that's the reality. Most guys today, young guys, they want easy money. And easy money doesn't come along. You know, easy money doesn't exist.
No.
It doesn't exist. Legal, at least.
No, I know.
I've encountered guys like that we pay them on Thursday, for example, and they won't show up on Friday.
You know, my mercenary days taught me something from a boss that I used to have, that he used to say that the dollars are hidden underneath the mud while we were doing masonry, and that's very true. Very true.
I like that.
Yeah.
But they don't see that.
Oh, nowadays, no.
All this mindset is being lost. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's unfortunate that it's being lost, that you're trying to teach them, but they're not hanging on to it.
Yeah.
It's very rare to find these days a kid with 20 to 25 years old that has a mentality like ours. And the drive is a unicorn.
Like 5%, 10% max of the guys.
How much time do you guys give them?
Week.
Like a week, two.
We give them time to grow.
But even if it depends. On the first day, if the first day comes
we
in, we still
let them assimilate to the workforce to see if it's just, you know, the different pace, if it's if it's the person is like that. But if it at the long course of the week it doesn't change, he's gone. But
you're hopeful. You're hopeful that
I am always hopeful. I always give the benefit of the doubt to the person.
Because nobody's the same.
Money, though, eh?
You know, but it's not all about the money, right? I mean, it is a business where you're looking. Obviously, we want to make money, but it's not like a subdivision. Again, kind of retracting to that. Like, it's not like we're in a rush, right? So everybody has good and bad qualities for everything. So it's always good to give a chance, see where it goes, see if they're better at this, worse at that, right? Because construction is compacted with so many different skill sets. Right. And we always give the chance. Right. Even if that costs us a little bit of money here and there.
Because you want to be hopeful that something can come out of this person. Right.
It's an investment. No, yeah.
Yes. We look at the person as an investment. If we put the time and effort, maybe this person can learn. We take a week or two to see if he's willing to learn. You know, some people have bad days. We don't know if he's having a bad day that day. So we give him time to get comfortable, get to know us, to be able to grow. If it doesn't change, then it's a different story. But to always, you know, always try, give them the opportunities. But like you said, it's a business. I have to, in the end of the day, I have to make sure I'm making money.
It's not a hobby. It starts as a hobby. It starts as a love.
Yeah.
And then you learn your lessons, and then you start realizing, hang on a sec, I can make profit from this. But then you have to deal with the workforce.
Yeah.
In an ideal world, how would you guys want to see it realistically? Like, if someone's coming up to you, your employee force, I guess the jobs, the clients, in an ideal world, how do you guys want to see it?
Ideally, we wanted to do our own thing, like, buy the houses.
Flip it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard nowadays with the way...
Oh, the amount of money involved. Like,
it's not worth it.
Even with two people,
it's not worth it.
We can't afford it. No, we can't afford it.
No, I know.
We can't afford it. Like,
yeah.
To buy even a house...
To carry apart, it, construction costs,
close to $1 million to buy a...
It's not worth it.
A piece of nothing.
Talk about a unicorn. That's a unicorn. That doesn't exist these days, right?
And it's, then it's, you spend $300,000-$400,000 that... We can't afford, like, you know, it's with our mortgage and families, we we can't afford to have a third mortgage. We're
no,
it's impossible for us.
It's too risky.
But it's always in the risk, though, right? If there's no risk involved, well, then what's the point?
Why did you guys go on your own and start building this brand?
Got tired of working by the hour, I guess.
But then you're working by the hour a different way. Sometimes you're making, like, listen, when I was in construction in the early days, you drive by fast food and you'd be like, that kid in that drive-thru is making more money than I am on this job right now. I guarantee you he is or she is.
I don't, from my point of view, like, not much about the money. I could be making the same money working by hour.
Yeah.
Honestly.
But you want to build something.
I like building. I like to, like my wife says, I have a problem every time we pass somewhere. So I did that. I like to work with my hands. I like to do work that I can see. I'm a certified machine operator. I was unionized, and I left to start the business with him. And you know, a machine operator, they make
a lot,
make absurd money.
I could pension too, everything.
But I don't know, the love for building something and seeing it coming from nothing. For me, it's very important for me. I like that. I like that. I like seeing that. Maybe I'm a bit old-fashioned.
No. I'm the same way. Chris, you like same thing?
Could have never said it better.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you guys prefer exterior work or interior work?
Personally speaking, I like exterior.
Why?
I think it comes from when I was a kid. When I dropped out of school, I knew that I wanted to work outside, and that's all I wanted. It had to be outside. And
you didn't want to be in an office.
Exactly. I was never made to just sit down all day. Like, it just wasn't in my character since young. And today I spend more time in an office than I'd like. But
now you're running a business.
Exactly. So, you know, you take what you can. And every now and again, I go on site to, you know.
So the outside world is now starting to ramp up, right? Weather's getting a little better. So clients are starting to call out, going, hey, we're ready to do this. We're ready to do that. So then you guys start planning for that, right?
Oh, yeah. It's about that time, yeah.
It's about that time. In my case, I prefer the gross work, the hard work, like
why?
The bricks.
Why?
The framing. I like that, the bulk of the work.
Yeah.
He likes hitting it and it hits him back, you know, like, let's go.
I don't know why. That's what I like. I like, you know, like the underpinning, doing the concrete, doing the framing.
And the underpinning is hard work.
I love it.
Really, really hard work.
I love it.
The challenge.
I make it simple. It's all about
Well, the planning. Steps, if you do it right and you're friendly with the engineer and you have no problems with the inspector and you do it in stages the way it's supposed to be done, it goes perfectly.
It goes perfectly. It goes smoothly. I like it because I make it simple and make it effective. If you make it effective, you don't have problems and it goes smoothly. All has to do with preparation and, you know, follow the steps. Luckily, we work with a very good engineer, a very good architect. They have more than 30 years of experience in the market, and you know, we ask him, "I want this. Give us your opinion. Whatever recommendation he does, we follow it. We don't."
Did you ever do? I did one. It was known as an uplift, where it's not a.
Going down, going up?
It's an L. So I'll send you guys drawings of it because the engineer is retired now. But I actually met the engineer through DGR Concrete. And so they did it a few times. So what it avoids is the jet out, right? So especially when you're fighting semi-detached properties.
Yes.
And so this upturn, I can't remember the official name. It's been a while since I actually looked at the drawings. But...
This happens in Toronto. It happens in any municipality where you get a semi-detached dwelling, you get a neighbor that is just an asshole. Simple as that, right?
Well, and all part of the fun.
You're not allowed to dig underneath.
Yes.
So this new technique bypasses their approval. You do not require their approval to do underpin.
As long as you don't pass the property line.
So you have until the party wall and in the middle of it, but you're not even disturbing that. That's the beauty of this. But what it does, instead of you having the solid concrete that you do in different stages completely underneath, basically you're extending the footing straight down, right? And then you've got this bench. Now you have the bench, right?
Oh, kind of like a brick ledge, so, but towards the inside.
No, so the way it works is that you get a concrete 8 inches thick straight down, and then as high as it is, it comes out on the bottom. So where you're going to go on the bottom. So right underneath your new concrete slab.
I see.
So normally what we do, so if you're going to go down 2 feet, you can go an 8-inch thick upturn, and you have to go up 2 feet, 8 inches thick, and then go 2 feet down plus the additional 8 inches and then come out. So now you're going 4 feet, and now you're going to go 4 feet horizontally.
Gotcha.
That removes the whole bench. And you don't need permission from the neighbor to do it. It costs more money, takes longer, because you have to do the rebar and everything in each section, and then you have to unfold the rebar to do the next section, and so on and so on and so on.
We haven't done nothing like that to the moment. I've seen it done, but I personally haven't done it.
It's a great way to tell the client to go fuck themselves.
Oh yeah,
I love it. I don't have to deal with them at all.
But there's always ways. I'm not an engineer, so I don't know what would my engineer recommend in that situation. But there's always ways. Like the one we're doing is a detached home. We just finished the underpinning this week, actually, and. The underpinning, the most important thing of the underpinning is maintaining the house secure as you do it.
As you excavate and pour,
When you're dealing with a neighbor, you have to be extra careful.
To an extent, because the same way that you can say you have to be extra careful, they have to be respectful too. They can't be confrontational and just not willing to work with you
when it comes to a
semi. At least we'd hope.
I know, you hope, right? So just like common decency is one thing, because like I've been in those situations where you just get angry neighbors just telling you, calling you names and just like demanding that you're not going to go on their property and all this crap, right?
We had to set up scaffolds 2 feet wide.
I know.
In the driveway.
I know.
Because the neighbor didn't allow us set up our scaffolds in the driveway.
I know.
It really comes with the Toronto work.
Absolutely. That's the challenge. That's why at the beginning I asked you guys, it's like the core is difficult, right? All these homes need it.
All homes need it.
Right?
We've been lucky in a few years past. You know, most neighbors been okay.
But we do work towards it. Okay, we've set up our method of working very clean, very respectful of the environment, of the neighbors, of the parking, of everything, already to minimize the nightmares and the headaches.
You don't
want
to give them an excuse, but see, I still used to do all that, and they would still treat you like shit. They would still speak down to you.
We tried to avoid that before the job starts.
I did all that too.
So before the job starts, we asked the client to get in writing. Consent from the neighbors, everything that if we're going to disturb, consent, like if we're doing landscape, we put in the contract, everything that we damage will be repaired at our cost.
I would go in and ask permission to go into their dwelling so I can photograph that wall, because there's no way that they're going to come back at me and going, there's a crack in the wall now and you guys are responsible because of all the hammering that you guys did and all the shaking and all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, well, based on the photographs before any work was done, there was no crack there, so I don't understand what you're talking about. That's not, we didn't do it. So as simple as that, right?
If it's like a case like that, like if we don't get photographs, then it's very complicated.
Yeah, because it's a he said she said kind of whatever it is, but it's just
in
it's
the
like
end of the day
yeah
it the fault always falls to us.
No, I know, but you're trying to minimize it because we go back to making the mistakes cost you money as a business owner, right? It's always a challenge. Like, trust me, I've had clients tell me like, okay, this neighbor's perfectly fine. That's the neighbor you need to watch out for. And then the one that is perfectly fine becomes the complete asshole.
Oh, that happens.
Like, I'm like, they just don't like contractors not working on their home.
So we were doing a job last year or the year before. We're replacing the back wall of a house.
Okay.
And we, the neighbor to the side, start taking pictures. So nothing, I don't care.
Did you start modeling? I would have started modeling.
Make a pose, he's taking pictures.
Then he started asking questions. You know, I answered the questions. You know, went smooth. The homeowner said, oh, he's an asshole. He's, you're going to have problems. I said, okay, I'm going to try to be smooth. The job went smooth almost to the end. Got to the end. She goes, oh, can you build a fence for me? Said, sure.
The neighbor was asking.
No, her.
Oh, the client.
The client. And we built the fence. She goes, oh, can you build my fence to the height of his fence? I said, it's not legal. She goes, oh, but it's just the height of his fence. Because it was not legal.
How tall was his fence?
Because he has a deck.
So he made his fence
so from deck.
The height of the deck.
Yes. So 2 meters from her property.
Yep.
No, a little bit more, no?
What she wanted, I think it was about like eight feet high.
Or so. Yeah, 2 meters. So about 8 feet high, 2 meters. So it would cover his... Yeah,
of course.
His side. So, you know, she had a bit of privacy from him. As soon as he saw the post up, called the city, cut it down. Right away. I said, okay. She goes to me, tell me you can do something about it. He goes, I can't do something about it, but it's going to take a few years to happen. She goes, how? Plant some cedars. So, you
know, cedars, yeah, exactly. They grow. Simple as that.
We plant some cedars.
Yeah.
They're almost... at the height that she wanted. In a couple of years, they're going to be as high as the house.
But that's a funny gray area. I still don't even know exactly how that works for the city, because if you build a deck and it's 2 feet off grade and then you build a 6 foot high fence off that deck.
Yes. So
from my understanding, it's fine.
It is.
Even on a second floor balcony, you could put a 6 foot high fence.
Yes.
But the fence has to still remain 6 feet.
But the yes, because the fence counts from the grade.
From the grade on their side, I know.
So if you're building a fence on the balcony, it's on the balcony that counts. It doesn't count from the floor, right? So it's there. But in this case, we're building from her driveway. Because her house is separated from his.
I know, but you're also dealing with the city and you're dealing with stupidity sometimes regarding rules, right? And it depends on who's barking louder and if they get away with it, right? So I guess she could also build the deck her height too, and then she puts her fence up there as well, and then she can do that, right? But the cedar's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cedar would work for sure.
She didn't want to build a deck. She because then she would have to go close to the property line.
Of course.
Oh, he was there measuring when I was putting the post. He was measuring, oh, is this in the property line? I go, listen, your garage is in the property line. Your house is in the property line. I'm building the fence completely on this side of the property line. So that fence was...
I don't miss those days in the core. I don't miss them at all.
I tried to be polite and tried to be civil with everybody.
That's all you can really do, but some people just are not like that.
I haven't had many problems. There's always... Thankfully, yes. There's always one or the other. Yes, to...
The engineers that you guys work with, do they prefer the overpour or dry pack?
He says it's to my choice. So I prefer... I prefer the overpour.
The overpour, right? Yes. Why? I'm just curious.
It saves time.
Okay.
And, you know, we have the vibrator, so might as well use it. I haven't had problems with it. But as long as you do your forms properly, you know, leave it open.
Well, if the engineer is signing off on it and he's letting you decide which one is better or what you guys want to do.
As long as it's simple. You just do the form a little bit higher.
A little higher, that's all.
And then break off whatever excess is. Like, you just make a boot.
Yeah.
You don't need to pull the form completely out. You make a boot, vibrate it nice and neat, make sure it goes out everywhere.
I guess technically, could you, after it cures, just take a hammer, SDS, and just drill and make sure that it's completely solid underneath?
Once we dig the other side, you'll see.
No, but if you're not excavating the exterior, you're building everything from the interior.
Yeah, no, but once you open the second phase, you can see if it's...
Oh, that's true. That's a good point. You can see if it's you totally see that.
You can see all the way through. And
and
when you take the pictures, like, for example, us, we take pictures of everything. When you take the picture, you can see if it's full all the way to the top. And we haven't had problems, thank God. We haven't had problems. It's you just have to make sure you vibrate proper. You make the form good enough, the boot wide enough, so you can put the vibrating reel over it back.
Simple as that.
You know, we leave the boot 5-6 inches higher, so you make sure you can put. There are other contractors that do the 4-inch out already.
Okay.
So the whole form is out, and then they just sit the wall on top of that.
Okay.
That is a good technique, too. I don't like it because then you have your drywall going over the cement instead of framing from the floor up.
There's no insulation whatsoever on that drywall.
It's
insulation
at that exactly. Point. Right. Yeah. So, for example, in this project, we are doing waterproofing on the inside as
From the inside. So you're doing French. Okay, so you're doing reverse, all right.
So if you do that 4-inch, then you're going to have the insulation.
You have a step. Like, you have the bench.
You have the bench.
Yeah.
For me, I don't like to see it. I'd rather, put the insulation all the way down to the footing. Then when I put my poly vapor barrier on the floor, it goes against the membrane, stick it to the membrane, and everything is there. There's no humidity. There's nothing coming in.
What's the average that, I guess, homeowners mostly trying to get a basement at 8 feet high total, right? Finish 8 feet high, right?
Yeah. Yes.
But it's funny how you do that, and they're coming from a 6-foot high basement.
Oh.
And they still don't think 8 feet high is high enough for them.
The one we are doing was 7, and we are going to 8. We excavated for 1 foot. It's not...
Okay. But
can you say the word?
There was a situation. There was a structural discrepancy that we wanted to address, and the underpinning
circumstances.
Exactly. Yes.
So the house was built in 1926, 27, and no footing. So the brick was laid on top of the sand.
Yeah, which was common.
Yes, very common for the time being. And when we start taking a piece of the floor to show our engineer, we saw that there was no footing. And I told the homeowner, because he goes, if we can, drop down the floor a couple inches so we have a little bit of space, it would be good. And I said, once I take the floor, we'll take a look. And because there's no footing, she goes, what do you recommend? I go, you want to put a new floor,
we have to go down.
We have to go down, put a footing, proper footing here. She goes, how much more? We give her the prices. She said, okay. She agreed upon it, and we did it.
Why not just go to 2 feet and get a little bit more height? And
We couldn't. We are at the max that we could now because of the old plumbing.
Oh, then they have to change all the plumbing.
We're going to change all the plumbing regardless, but the outside...
Yeah, yeah. Then you'd have to do an injector at that point.
We have to dig everything to the curb because we cammered in and the slope to the clean out the city installed, it's less than 1%. So it's very still. So we can go normally it comes out the house and then goes straight down.
Yep.
And that would go... Like that.
That was right to the curb, right to
to the clean out, and then from the clean out.
Was that a street that hadn't been done yet, hadn't been upgraded yet?
Yeah, it hasn't been upgraded.
Because apparently all the new ones that they're doing them far lower. So then, as soon as you bypass your property line,
it drops
like a rock. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but this one, No, they did the homeowner a few years back did the new clean out because they had root problems.
Okay.
But there was no slope. There's like, we couldn't go down. We couldn't go down. Like at right now, our floor, the bottom of our floor is going to be at the top of the drain.
Do most clients understand how much work's involved to do all this major structural, major construction?
80%.
Really, yeah? They 80%. Get it? They totally get it?
80%. There's always 20%. They go, why? I saw a YouTube video.
They say that right away?
Oh, that...
Did they watch the whole video or did they just watch the first minute?
Very good question.
That's the thing. It looks so easy on the YouTube video. I was okay.
Sure,
so,
then you go. Here's a shovel.
Do yourself, yeah. Right? Those 20%, I don't even bother. Like, even sending prices out because I know that it's just going to be a waste of our time.
You get a lot of clients on the inside. They're always asking for removal of all the walls and then dealing with that structure at that point.
We get a lot of like that, yeah.
Like full gut kind of thing?
Yeah, because most clients, especially the younger clients, they don't want the compartments. They don't want the separate rooms. They don't want the narrow hallway along the staircase. I'm talking about Toronto homes, right?
Yeah.
So they just like get rid of this main wall here, but they don't understand that those homes built almost 100 years ago, that wall
is structural.
Is structural, right? Everything's falling on that, right?
We actually have a client that we haven't started working with them. He just bought a house 3 years ago, and he called us in to fix the basement. And it's a 1900 house, so the pillars in the basement is logs.
Yep.
Right, and it's a townhome, and the whole basements are connected to the neighbors, so you can crawl through one and to the other to the
really.
Neighbors. Oh yeah, it's
what part of town is this?
Junction,
really?
Right on Annette Street.
Wonder why it was built like that,
bro. It was
like some secret shit going on back
then. I don't know. Maybe
so you can literally go from house.
You can crawl.
Yeah, from basement
to basement. And that's what he wants to
wonder
stop.
Wonder if it was Diddy's house, eh?
So that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to build a wall, block wall and property line, build a block wall and property line, and eliminate that. And I maybe excavate, and I go, you know, this, I got to call an engineer. We got to come in here, and you got to take a look at this before.
I guess technically I should ask an engineer this, because I always like asking them these really interesting scenarios where, I guess if you dig deep enough, you can keep on digging horizontally under everybody, depending on the size of how wide you're digging, without having to reinforce.
Oh, absolutely.
Possibly, depending on the length that you're digging.
Eventually you have to put some bracing and go along there, but you could technically build a whole tunnel all the way around.
They built tunnels from Mexico to the US.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff, right?
So it is possible, because if it's like building a tunnel. You have support, you can build. But in that area is sand. So sand.
Oh,
once you start opening,
it's water at that point.
You're done.
Yeah, it's just gonna just crumble.
So sand.
It'd have to be a clay. It'd have to be a hard clay. It has to be hard, which makes it more challenging to dig.
Yes, but it makes it better to work.
Yeah.
Sand is easy and nice and clean, but in structural, the clay is better for us because you can carve higher.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't need to slope it. You can carve it higher. Sand, you have a limit. You know, you go 2, maybe 3 feet. If you go higher than that, you're done. You can't because it's going to crumble on you. It's challenging sometimes, but you know, like I said, we always ask people that knows all those mats. We make sure we do our prep work before we do any job, because in the end of the day, if I go into a job with my eyes closed, I'm just burying money there.
No, it's not a good thing.
We do the prep, plans, we do structural. Make sure even if it's something that, you know, don't need a permit, but I think I need structural.
I don't need a permit?
No, there's things that you can do without
permit. No, there's certain things that you can do without a permit, but anything structural.
You can absolutely do without a permit. There's some things you can do without a permit if you have an engineer sign off.
Yeah, but that's what I mean, is that the fallback is that you need an engineer to sign off on it, which costs time and money at that point.
I prefer an engineer.
Oh, 100%.
Sign, sign off
then on OBC, anything. Then an inspector?
Then an inspector, 100%.
All like day.
Any day of the week, I'd rather have an engineer.
Oh, for sure.
Because the engineer, I'll ask him what he wants. I'll do what he wants.
Yep.
He signs it.
Yep.
I send it to the
city. Send pictures. Here you go. This is how it's done. You know, it's done.
Well, having a good structural engineer makes you money and saves you a lot of headache.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
It costs money. Like an engineer, it's expensive.
But it saves you time and any kind of confrontation with an inspector or city bylaw, right?
Yeah.
3 years ago, I did a porch for an engineer. And he says, I'm not going to do the drawings from my house. I'm going to ask a friend of mine to do it from my house. It's just a little awning in front of the house, a new porch, everything. So he designed the templates, everything, and then he asked his friend to do all the drawings, everything. The porch and everything was built to withstand a Hurricane Class 8. Like that thing, that's massive. You could land a 747 on that thing. And the inspector got there. He goes, oh, you got to do this and this. I was doing the framing, for example. He made me go get SKF screws because the nails for my gun was not good enough. And I go, what do you mean it's not good enough? I always use nails and hangers, and now I can't use. I got to use screws.
The structural screws.
Not the GRKs.
So I know you're talking about.
The GRKs.
Yeah.
Had to put the GRKs in. $60 a pack. I go, why? You use nails. It's only like 8 feet long. It's still sitting on steel posts.
Did he make you do it?
Oh, he made me do it.
Yeah. You had to change them all?
Yeah. Well, I didn't have to take the nails out, but I had to put the GRKs and everything. Everything.
It's and just a headache for nothing.
Sometimes I don't mind challenging inspectors because they're not the smartest cats in the fucking room sometimes.
I prefer not to. Because
if you're certain of it and you already had conversations with other people, like an engineer, and you already have information coming and they're going to get a letter for you and you're already set up for it, I'm like, I'm sorry, but I'm going to challenge you, man. And then here you go.
Yeah, and a letter, if in cases like that, is fine. Like for, when I have a letter, normally the inspectors don't even bother looking at it. They look at the letter, see, that's how it's done, okay, fine. They look what the engineers specificate, they see if it's done the way, and that's it. But if I don't have a letter, like, it doesn't call, in the project, it didn't call for GRKs, it just called for the wood, doesn't say how you have to attach it together. Well, you know, framing. You use the framing gun. 3 1/4 inch nails, spiral, boom, boom, boom.
I had an inspection recently where it was a plumbing and HVAC. And he showed up on time, which is great, wonderful. And walks in and takes a peek at the vanity, looks at the P-trap. And then he looks at the drawings and he goes, okay. Then he's like, okay, heat supply. All right, cold air return. Okay, all right. He's walking out. And I'm like, do you need to say anything else? He goes, nope. Sir, you'll have the approval by the end of the day. Thank you. Have a good day. See you later.
Gorgeous. Something's up here. What is going on?
No. What was going on is the guy before him, the day before, was the dick. You know what I mean? But he understood it. He got it. He didn't turn on a faucet. He didn't have to check anything else. He just looked and then knew what he saw, and he was happy with what he was seeing. And then he was just like, literally his foot was out the door already saying, you'll have the approvals by the end of the day.
Well.
Done. And that's how it should be. I'm sorry. But
if you're doing the job properly.
Yeah.
The inspector should get there and, you know, see it. And if you screwing it up.
They'll also see that.
Oh, of course you'll see that.
Right.
So, of course, we'll see. Like, you just do your homework. Make sure you do your job properly. Because once you do it, you get to, they talk among each other. They see if you have a red flag on your project or not.
Yeah.
if you have a red flag, then done. The inspector is going to go there with magnifying glass. If you don't have a red flag, he's going to go there, you know, take a look. It's good. Let's go. It takes the same time to do it right. And coming back to my motto, slowly, quality makes it right.
How many employees you guys have going on right now?
We got three.
Three guys right now? Yeah. You're on the job site right now?
No.
Today's day off?
We were
coming to the TLC show.
TCL. Like we said, we can't have them in the job site without us.
Got it, yeah.
They all just labors.
Okay.
We just finished digging in the basement yesterday. Like, underpinning was on Tuesday, last pour, and yesterday was finishing everything.
The last, that's the actual slab.
Digging down.
Yeah.
So we can do the plumbing. So the only thing that's there to do is start doing the waterproof while the plumbing is there. I'm going to have them doing the waterproof.
So they just get an extra long weekend, that's all. Simple as that.
They appreciate it. They've been digging for days.
How are clients finding you guys? Is it just strictly word of mouth these days?
Not strictly, but...
Yeah, lots of word of mouth.
Lots of word of mouth.
Facebook. I got a lot of movement from Facebook.
Really? So you're sharing stuff and sharing current projects, and then they're reaching out to you?
Yeah. Through the platform. And in general, you know, there's lots of people asking for work and stuff like that, so I'm pretty keen at
finding.
Yeah.
Are the clients getting more active in bidding? Like, they're competing against more than two people, more than three people these days?
If as a referral?
Yeah. No, if it's a referral, probably not. But if it's a new client?
Like, every referral we have,
They don't bother.
They don't bother bidding with anybody.
But anything new?
Anything new?
Yeah, generally.
They go with one or two more contractors.
I think it's normal, right?
It's normal. And they should. They should.
Yeah.
Because we are not the cheapest guys in the block. We're not the most expensive either. We like to think that we are in middle ground. But there's guys out there doing it cheaper than us. You know, I don't know how, but...
Maybe they're cutting corners here and there. We don't know. We don't know.
I can't judge. If
something bad happens, you won't hear about the company anymore.
Last year in the summer, I don't know if you heard about this. There was a house being built in Toronto, renovated in Toronto. They were doing underpin and framing on the second floor. And at some point, the house fell to the neighbor's property. And this was at June, July last year. And... that's things that I don't like see happening, because that gives bad name to me.
Did anybody get hurt on that one?
No.
Okay.
But it gives bad name to contractors.
Of course it does.
For example, the architect that we work with, he doesn't do any plans underpinning if it's not a licensed contractor. At all.
Makes sense.
Because he's already gotten the shit end of the stick.
He's worked with some trades that...
Yeah, and the liability fall on him.
It falls on everybody. When underpinning goes south, it falls on everybody, from the contractor to the architect to the engineer to everyone.
Yeah.
And so he's learned his lesson.
So if it's not licensed, he doesn't work with it. Period. He doesn't even bother doing the drawings.
It's a smart move.
Oh, yeah. It's a smart move. And we have to do it like that. And, you know, unfortunately, there's a few bad apples out there. There's a lot of good guys like us doing great work. I know a few, you know. In the street that we are, there's another crew just down the street doing a great job there on an addition. But there's always a bad apple that gives bad name to most of us.
But the problem is that clients don't realize, especially with underpinning or major structural components that you got to do on a house, it's expensive. It's not expensive for the reason that we're trying to take advantage of you. It's expensive because there's so much involved, and also potential liability that you're taking full responsibility of.
Absolutely.
So that's why it's expensive. We have to prepare for it.
So this underpinning that we did, it's 40 by 20 on the inside, the house. Okay. It took us a month.
Yeah.
Every day working.
Yeah.
Every day working. We pour one day, we start taking forms next day. We didn't stop. A month. It's going to be a month on day 11, right?
Probably.
Yeah, on the 11th of this month.
Yeah, with the crew, with equipment, with concrete, pumps. Like, it's a lot of money. Oh, yeah.
It takes time. It takes a lot of money. I don't know. We had, at one point, we had 6 cats in there, right? So it takes manpower, a lot of dirt coming out.
Yeah.
So it's expensive. Liability, make sure the job is done properly. It's expensive. Underpinning is very expensive. Very expensive. And, you know, it shouldn't be anybody doing it. I think that should be, every underpinning should be designed by an engineer and architect.
Oh, 100%.
And
plus, it's like, it's an education. Like, the stuff that you will learn from speaking to the engineer during that process, you're going to learn so many engineering principles because they're all applicable to other sections of the house.
Oh, yes.
The way their mind works and the way that they've drawn this out and the way that they're asking you to hold up structure while demolishing parts of structure. Like, the lessons I learned from those experiences gave me the confidence to, like, walk into, you know, a place and I'm like, yeah, we can return this wall. Wall's gone, but you prep it and you safety it and you set up and you're like, you know exactly how to set it up to secure things so then you can remove something without ever damaging the structure.
Yeah.
It's it's an education.
That's the key of experience.
With my experience, I've been in customers' house that they, you know, we go there to see it because it's possible. It's doable. Yeah. It's doable. It takes time and prep. It's probably going to cost you this much. That much? For a wall? It's not about the wall itself. It's about everything involved.
It's for the house.
Right. There was a customer a few years back. He wanted to take a wall in the center of the house.
Price.
Right? but he has a massive staircase in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him this, you know, we have to put a wall here, put a wall downstairs, put a wall here, put a wall downstairs, make a footing in the basement big enough to put a pillar to hold the staircase from the bottom, staircase stalls. It's going to cost about $15,000 to $20,000. What? No, I thought that was like $4,000 or $5,000. For $5,000, doesn't pay for the material.
Where did he get that number from?
YouTube. Unfortunately, YouTube.
The age of too much information.
The age of misinformation.
Yes, no, there's a lot of misinformation out there.
Yeah. It's not about removing a wall. It's not the cost about removing a wall. It's the cost about
everything
securing
involved.
The house.
Securing the house. This is a massive house. And if you don't do it right, you're going to end up with a house in your back.
Yeah, and you don't want that, right? Nobody wants that.
No, because then our insurance goes to the roof and our name goes to the, down the drain.
Of course.
And so
That's not the objective. That's not what you want to achieve.
I'm here for the long run, not to work today and not tomorrow.
So do you think it's going to get worse for you guys to try to find labor? Is it going to get better? Or is it just going to continue the same?
I think it's going to get better because like us, there's a lot of contractors out there that are looking for good trades.
Of course.
And they're going to start weeding out. Everybody's going to start weeding out. And we're going to...
You think the weeding out of these kids coming into the industry, the mindset of always wanting to be paid up front, lots of money as possible...
I think they're going to start changing.
Yeah?
They're going to have to start changing because they're going to learn... It's going to hit them, like, you know... Just not working for us. We work 2 days for a guy. The next week, we work 2 days for another guy. And next week, we work 2 days for another guy. It just can't be. I need a stable job. And they eventually, they're going to learn that, you know, they need a steady job. They, you know, there's an old saying in Portuguese, grain in grain, chicken feeds itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
They eat one grain at a time. They get it gets fed. So... They're gonna have to open their eyes. They're gonna take a few
years. But not a lot of people want to get into this industry.
Most of them, unfortunately, doing it because they want the easy money.
Yeah,
we hear these guys on the internet say, "Oh, I make $40, $50 an hour. Do this."
Doing what?
I don't know where. So I would like to do that money.
Not as a laborer, not as...
To do $40-$50 an hour in renovations...
You're a key of some sort,
You have to be a foreman that you can do a lot of stuff. Because to stay competitive, right? To stay competitive, you have to... or else, like, you just do multi-million dollar houses, but not a lot of us can do that.
But I mean, there's still money to be made, a lot of money to be made working with clients and educating them properly on what things cost. That if they want this project done, whatever the scope is, that this is what it costs. And you should be looking at two other people to quote it, and they should be in the same cost. At that point, you're hiring based on personality. You're hiring on based on who I want to work with.
Absolutely.
That happens to us.
Yeah.
We always tell the customer, you know, get informed. Do your research as well. The cost of material, the time frame. You know, talk to other people. We can refer you to customers that we have done. Talk to them, see what cost they had. You know, we give examples on past projects, how much it cost to other customers. So they can be aware of what's going on.
What I think is happening as well is, as a homeowner's perspective, I think they're getting very high ranges of quotes, right? So you get like one that's more or less what you should be paying, and another one that's like 50% less, and another one that's a lot more expensive. And I see that a lot. So they get kind of confused, right? Like, are these two just expensive and this guy is in the right range? Is this guy just way too cheap? Is that guy too expensive?
Well, that's what they should be thinking. They should be thinking that if they're extremely low or they're extremely high, there's a flag associated with those. But they should be looking for, it doesn't matter. They need to do more homework. If they got three prices and there are three completely different prices, one's in the middle, one's in the low, one's in the high, then they should be looking at a fourth and a fifth price. Yeah. And that fourth or fifth price is either going to go to the middle, which most likely it will, or it's going to go to the low or the high. And then once you get two aces or three aces, then that's where it should be.
When it's too good to be true, it's because it's probably is.
Exactly. So you should not just be grabbing towards the small number.
Of course.
Right? That's where they get into trouble.
We had a few customers that, you know, went to the small number.
And they get into trouble.
And then
call
us to come and fix.
Of course. Yeah. And I never did that. I just never.
We tried to avoid.
I still remember this one client that reached out. I quoted, didn't go with me, went with somebody else. And then he started doing the job for this client and he was unsure of the work being performed. So he contacted me again, asked me if I would pass by just to kind of give him a consult on my opinion on the work being done. And I said, I'm sorry, I'm not interested in consulting. I'm not interested in coming by. I presented, you hired somebody else. You have to have the faith in that person now to do that work. Absolutely. But you do not have access to me anymore.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. If you think he honestly felt I was being a dick. Yeah. He was like, I'm not a resource for you to reach out after you did not award.
Of course. That's
not how this industry works.
It can't. We can't, because if we do that, we enable them to take advantage of us.
Of course. That's exactly what's going on there. You hired somebody. Obviously, I got the waff that he hired him based on price. So now you're watching the work unfold and you're unsure of the work. So now you want to get the right price opinion associated with the work that was poorly priced?
Yeah.
That's not how this industry works.
Of course not.
It's not, and it shouldn't be. But a lot of customers, unfortunately, they go with a low range because everything is expensive now. It's super expensive. And most customers, you know, they don't know the price range.
But I have no pity for customers when I see them roll in with a luxury vehicle, when I see them selecting ultra high expensive appliances and accessories. I have no pity for them because all they're doing is they're asking you to discount so then they can take that money and save it elsewhere and put it for things that they really want.
Which happens all the time.
That's not
right. I don't have pity on them. It's a game. It is what it is.
Yeah.
You want to put a $3,000 dishwasher, but you can't pay $3,000 for a steel beam that you need.
You just don't want to. It's always the weakest link, right? It's like,
I'm not going
to
budge on that, right? simple. I'm not going to budge.
You guys ever find anything interesting when you're uncovering some work? Like when you're getting into homes and...
Oh, all the time.
Like what kinds of stuff are you guys coming up?
Newspapers.
Yeah. But even like shoddy, like stuff that's just hidden. You're like... So I'm still surprised sometimes when I see joists, old joists, traditional dimensional joists, like nominal numbers, just cut out to death. Like just, I have no idea the creativity behind how they cut this out. Yeah. And then it's still, you uncover it because you remove drywall and you see it and you're still surprised that the above is still there. Like you're wondering, how is this even allowed?
So it stuck recently. The job that we're doing, all the windows, there's 5 windows in the house, okay? In the basement, they cut the joists in an angle going up, and the joists, those 3 or 4 joists catching the window, they'll cut to 2-inch thick at the end.
No.
I'm serious. Yeah. So we have to bridge them all.
And header them off now.
Yeah, all of them. So... all of them were cut. All of them.
I don't get it.
All.
Like the thought process behind that, I don't get it.
And it's like 3-4 joists per window. Whatever hit in the middle of the window, they cut it so they could put the window in and open the window and close the window.
I saw a post recently where I was actually discussing it. Funny enough, I was discussing it with Tim because he sent it to me. And it was a vaulted, it looked like a 2x10. Dimensional lumber, and the framer cut out the very bottom where the angle goes, right? So it was a ridge joist rafter, and he cuts out a little notch to fit the hanger into it and then secure the hanger with nails, right?
I've seen that. Yeah.
And did the next one. So he sent it to me, and I was like, that's interesting. I mean, like, I like it. First thought I had was they make hangers on an angle, so you can use them for that purpose.
Yes.
So then I sent it to an engineer friend of mine that I know, and I was like, is there any risk here? Like, I don't understand. Is there any risk of compromising of the lumber? Like, will it split from the cut and go? And he goes, no, it won't. It will never split that way. It will always split with the grain. So even if it splits with the grain, you still have the strength. And then the thing is, the engineer was also saying that it would pass if the drawings are asking for a 2x10, you upsize it and go to a 2x12 and make that same slit and then use the hanger and it would still pass that way. But you have to do the upsell on the lumber.
Right.
So I thought it was kind of interesting. So I was like, it saves you the trouble of having the sleeve there underneath from the hanger.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a nice little technique, but an engineer was signing off on it. So I'm like,
okay. I've seen that before. I've seen other, worse job than that. Like I've seen, we did the... a little renovation in the house. So when the customer bought the house was already halfway open.
Okay.
So she has a little room in there and she wanted to completely open the space. I said, over here there's a pillar. We call the engineer. He goes, what can you do here? So there's a pillar. You just do a partition wall, put a header on top. You're fine. It's okay. Start opening it up. When I opened the other side, a massive 20-foot beam supported on 1 2x4 nailed to the brick with 2 inches from the ground.
There was a gap?
Yeah.
So what was that beam really sitting on?
Just
on the 2x4 that was anchored to the brick?
Yeah. That didn't fill out, honestly, because the trusses of the roof will go from wall to wall. Because if it was just the trusses that would be split, that wouldn't fall off. In that same house, they put 2x4s along the wall to hold the drywall. I took the 2x4s and the drywall fell on my head. Serious. Me and the labor that we had that was with that day, we got the drywall fell on our head.
So obviously that work wasn't permitted, right?
Oh, yeah.
It couldn't have been permitted because it would never have been passed.
An inspector would never pass. So I had to replace that, build it out, bring it out, go in the basement, build it out.
See, that's the problem with us is that if we discover it, now we have to fix it.
Fix it.
And then that's extra cost sent to the client, right?
That. The ceiling of that living room was not supposed to be removed. We had to remove because the drywall fell down, all the insulation. So we had to reinsulate the attic. because it's you know, it was a single bungalow. We had to insulate, all extra cost that the customer was not prepared for.
And but the customer should always, like, there should be YouTube videos there saying this shit, the hidden costs, you know. Yeah.
I always tell customer, be prepared for the 20% increase. We don't know what's hidden. We're doing structural work. We might just keep the money on the side. You might not need it, but you might need it. If you don't need it, you don't need it. But if you need it, it's there. If you need a $10,000 job and you just have the $10,000, don't do it. Wait until you have, you know, 12 or 14, because you don't know what's going on. When we open walls, we don't know what's in there.
I used to say to clients, prepare for the how to keep your pants on while losing your shirt moments during construction.
Yeah, because it...
Because it comes. It comes. Especially comes the older homes. It just comes.
Oh, yeah.
This project that I told you about, the underpinning. The underpinning was not in the project. The permits we put to the city, the underpinning was not in the project. Had to be added up. We start digging. The water line.
Oh, that's another story.
Lead.
Really?
So we're still waiting on the permit from the city to replace it.
You need a permit to replace the lead?
The main line, yes.
Really, huh? Yeah.
If it comes from the outside, we need a
permit. Well, you would just change, you'd change it regardless.
We cannot touch the valve without city permit.
The valve, they do require a permit, yeah.
You cannot touch it.
Yeah, that's why every plumber has a key.
No, they're not allowed to touch it.
I know, but that's seriously, why every plumber has a key.
But you got to make sure that you don't break it.
No, I know.
Remember earlier when I told you that my guy broke the water pipe?
Yeah.
$150 to come and open the water, $150 to come and shut it off.
Yeah.
While you put a push fitting on the copper.
There's little things that we all learn and that, like, little things that we can kind of, it's not necessarily lying or...
Okay.
Little things that can happen that you could make the call into more of an emergency call.
It was an emergency.
Yeah.
I had to shut off the water.
Of course.
I had the water running for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Full power into the basement. If that wasn't sand, that basement would be flooded. It was sand, so I had a couple of floor drains, so it was draining out. But imagine I don't. I had a swimming pool down in the basement. Right? So it's stuff like that that scares me. That's why I don't like to be out of the job when I have just laborers. If I had a guy that could do what I do, yeah, I could have two jobs. If I don't, I'm not out of there. Or me, or him, or...
I was just having a conversation with somebody I know that just ended up buying another property as a rental property, right? So they're just, you know, they're like, let's do some investment, whatever. Let's buy a rental property. So they bought a brand new builder grade subdivision house. And you guys probably know this trick, right? So he takes possession of the house, and the first month everything was fine. He sees the utility expenses. The water bill is at a certain rate, whatever it was, like $400 or whatever it was, right? And then all of a sudden the tenants move in. And I think it was like the next water bill came along, and it was twice. It was like over $800. And he was like, there's no way these people use that much more water. So then he complained to the services, and they're like, you've got a leak. Now you got to remember, these are brand new toilets from a builder, right? So the city tells him to do the dye food coloring trick, right?
Yeah.
So put it in the tank, leave it. And if you see it in the bowl, then the flapper's malfunctioning and there's a leak there. And that's how there's water, which is just trickling. And over a period of time, you lose water. That's how it works, right? So that's when you buy a shitty toilet, right? So sure enough, he does it to all the toilets, and every single toilet was leaking.
Jesus.
Every single one. So that he finds the problem with it, right? And then he's furious because this is a brand new builder grade house, brand new cheap toilets, and this is his problem. His first mindset is, I have to replace all the toilets. And I was like, do you realize that there's two working parts in a toilet? Why are you replacing the toilet? All you got to do is replace the flapper or the actual lever that controls the supply coming in. So we know that it's the flapper that's failing. So you go replace that. Exactly. So I said, just go on YouTube. I said to him, like, I'm not going to do it for you. I'm not going to walk you through it, but go on YouTube and find that replace the flapper video. And just, you might have to take the tank off and do that, or you might not, depending on plumbers
are listening. Isn't that even like a Tarion claim?
So easy
to I don't push. Even know if it's worth a Tarion claim. Or it could be. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. I'm not 100%.
But it's just amazing, like brand new, cheap toilets.
Oh, yeah.
Failing that quickly.
Just ridiculous.
When it's like most new toilets are not even using flappers, they're using canisters. It's a different system now, right?
There's the problem with that, they fail is because of the long time storage. So
yeah, it's true. So they're manufactured.
The manufacturer, they stay in storage because they're mass manufactured. They stay in storage, and that because the rubber is cheap.
And we don't know what the rubber is. Yeah,
it dries up too fast.
Good point.
And when you put it into use, it starts getting water and starts curving. It doesn't actually, like, it's supposed to be flat, and it starts curving because it dried up.
And it creates a leak.
Creates a leak that you, it's not visible, but you know, you lose tons of water.
See, it goes back to like, he's a person in the industry at a different level, but he doesn't really know that much about construction. So then he reaches out to somebody who knows a little bit about construction to pick their brain. He's not a go to Google and YouTube and find out. I'm going to just speak to somebody that I kind of trust. It's the same way that I say, take advantage of the engineers when you have them on site, because you'll get a free education from them. The homeowner should be speaking to the tradesperson that they hired if they're confident enough in that tradesperson. You could probably even be testing us if you want while we're there. And you could be asking us a bunch of questions at that point. You know, I heard about this. Can I do that? Whatever. You could pick our brain to a certain extent, right? We're not there because we still have to focus on the job at hand. We have to still do the work and stuff like that. But if you hire the right person, they'll be confident enough in answering the questions that you're presenting to them.
And it brings pleasure to like educate our clients. And that's what we aim for.
The value that you bring.
Absolutely.
To the table.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, education is key. Education is key.
So that's just communication. That's all as simple it is, right?
Yeah.
So clients should be hiring the right person, so then you could be educated on how things should be done properly.
And if you're working directly for homeowners, communication is a key part of it, of explaining what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, how it's going to work, the coordination involved, everything, and especially to justify the money that you're asking for, right? Like, the client has to understand.
I'll never fight that, eh? I go, first of all, every tradesperson's underpaid.
Yes.
I don't give a shit what client you are.
Yeah.
So I'll never fight that. I won't even entertain that conversation. I'll walk away from you. If you think that it's expensive, then you don't understand this industry.
Oh, yeah.
You don't get what we have done and how much work we continue to do and how much homework we continue to do and how well we provide a service and a product. Yeah. So if you're already insulting us by saying that you're overpaid, then I don't want to have this conversation. Goodbye. See you later.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just the thousands of dollars in tools that we have and years of experience.
You guys are Makita boys, aren't you?
Hell no.
No, what are you guys?
DeWalt all day.
No. Seriously?
No.
Underpinning and masonry? DeWalt? No way.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. This is the pure truth. I'm a Makita boy.
Yeah, that's what I figure.
And Makita is more
powerful. But he came over to DeWalt and asked him why.
Why?
Because of the labors.
Because of the what?
The labors. I have at least 10 batteries.
Oh, because they're just going to...
I have 10 batteries of the Makita. 5 amps, $150.
That are garbage.
That they, when they put it away, because the Makita battery has a big fault. The porting charge is exposed. Anything that falls on top, it breaks. That's it. You can't charge it. You can't use it. It's garbage.
I didn't know that.
And I have like 10 or 12 at home that I can do nothing about.
So can you like piss on the DeWalt batteries and it'll totally work fine?
Not piss, but you can drop them because like the DeWalt, the Milwaukee, they're very good at that point because the porting charge is inside.
Mm.
While the Makita porting charge is a little floppy thing, a white little thing that sticks out half an inch, it's the worst design.
I bet you miss your Makita.
Oh, I still have my Makita tools, but I use
them. You use them.
And then I have the DeWalt for the grunt.
Do you guys prefer residential or commercial?
Residential.
It's residential every day.
Really, huh?
Yeah.
I see a lot of guys switching over to commercial. They prefer commercial these days.
We like the challenge.
We did a few clinics for a special client. And it was very good work. The client is amazing. But commercial is, the rules are a bit different.
Yep.
And
pays are a little longer.
Yes. And we feel comfortable in residential, dealing with homeowners directly.
Yeah, our platform is kind of revolving around the homeowners. So that's what we get most.
So focus on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we focus on
that's what we do.
Quality yeah. and, you know, of the homeowner. Have the one-on-one experience with the homeowner. Make the homeowner experience the project with us instead of, you know, I'm paying for this. No. What you building in your house, see what you're building. You can talk about yep. it later.
Yeah.
You know, for us, it's marketing. Because then that homeowner is going to talk to other homeowners. And you know, but it's educational, too.
It's networking.
Yes.
Networking.
I think so.
Thank you, guys. I got to do the 12 questions. Let me share the information again. It's Pinati, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Construction and at PinatiConstruction.gta, www.pinati.com, and then info at PinatiConstruction.com, right?
Yep.
You guys ready for this?
Sure.
What's your favorite construction word?
Word?
Word.
Vibrator.
Wow. That's so important. You have a DeWalt vibrator?
Oh, yes. Hell yeah.
Yes, favorite construction work. I don't know. I don't have one.
You don't have a favorite construction word?
No, I don't. I never thought about it.
Not one word. You're like, that's a cool word. That's a nice word. Construction.
I have one that I might probably can't say.
Why?
Because it's
a swear word?
Yes.
No, you can swear on this show.
Okay, so this is actually a funny story. It's a word that I catch from his father. It's fuck-a-tet.
Fuck-a-tet?
Yeah.
It's an abbreviation. It's an extension of...
It's a conjunction of two things.
I like that word. What is your least favorite tool?
Sledgehammer.
Least favorite... I don't know. Probably... I'm not sure. I don't know. My least favorite tool. I don't know. I kind of like all of them.
You like all tools?
Yeah.
Every single one?
I think so. They're all kind of coming.
The Makita coffee maker? The Makita
I mean, cooler. As long as it's not Makita, I love them.
Bullshit.
Nothing at all?
I don't know. Maybe. I'm not a big fan of the pickaxes, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, shit. I haven't seen a pickaxe in a long, long time.
Yeah. Since my masonry days.
Wow. What construction sound do you guys love?
The radio, putting on
those, any station?
Oh, yeah. 97.7 Hits FM. Been listening to it for 20 years. Don't wow. change it.
Radio's going to disappear one day.
It won't be. It won't.
It's going to be hanging out with the phone booth.
No.
Soon know, enough. Everyone's listening to podcasts and listening to their own music.
Yeah. Podcast. Yeah. I like the future. I like my radio.
What's yours?
The noise of a quick cut. Gas engines. I love that revving, that RPM.
Yep.
Definitely yep. my favorite.
Favorite beverage?
Oh, yeah. Beer.
Which one?
Stella.
I have to go with beer, too, but Heineken.
Heineken.
Oh, yeah.
What turns you on and off in construction?
On a new project. Always like gets me excited. Off, dumb people.
What turns me on in construction is when two people or more are just vibing. When you're going at it and it's just boom, 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 yep. boom, boom. I love it. I love it.
Maximum production.
Laser focus.
Yeah.
It is the best feeling. And turn off is when someone cuts that feeling. Like it's going, like dumb people. Like yes. it's going, and then he doesn't get in the vibe.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, dude, go sit in the van. I don't know.
You're killing it. What's your favorite curse word?
Curse word?
Fuck.
Curse. Never for this? I'm just saying.
There you go.
Yeah.
Never food this. It must be food this.
It is food this, but I said it in English because of the odds. No, because all my guys are Portuguese or Brazilian.
Yeah, so there you go.
It is food this.
What's yours, Chris, saying?
Mine is definitely, oh, brush.
Favorite vehicle, any mode of transportation, anything in the world?
Ford F-150.
I love the GM.
What's with the new one?
Which one?
Butt-ass ugly.
I love it.
The new one, the new design. The new design 2025.
With the grill, all the same color, the lights. I love it. I just saw one the other day, too, actually. I love it. I don't know why I love it.
I love that
there's no distinction. I love it.
I don't know about that one, but Ford's having some issues, man. Especially if you own a Lightning.
No, electric hasn't been. Ford lost billions on electric.
There's only one person I know that listens to that show has a Lightning, and I'll never agree with anything he has to say about that thing. So, what's yours, Chris?
The 2015 GMC Savannah, not the Savannah, the All Terrain.
Oh,
the All Terrains, the Sierras, 1500s.
They're really nice.
You're gonna love them.
Transmission shit, though.
I never thought in my life I would see $100,000 pickup trucks.
Oh, they cost more than $100,000.
That's what I'm saying, is I never thought that it would ever be $100,000 pickup trucks, right? Back in my day, you could have easily bought a regular pickup truck for like $3,000. Yeah. Used, simple.
Yeah. I paid $30,000 for mine 5 years ago.
Never. What do you guys miss from your childhood?
Ooh. Yeah. My mama's cooking. That's what I miss the most.
My childhood. I don't know. Probably. I probably have to say my mom's cooking too, man. Damn.
What profession other than your own would you guys like to attempt one day?
I would love to be an engineer.
An engineer? So you're in class right now, like every time you do a job.
Yeah, it was my dream, my childhood dream, to become an engineer, but I was too dumb to stay in school.
Or too smart.
Depending on how you look at it. What's yours, Chris?
Architectural work. I like the idea of the blueprints, and I'm planning on taking a course in the very near future of like AutoCAD and how, like the blueprints in general. I like the idea of the arranging of spaces and architectural work. Yeah.
It's funny that you're calling them blueprints, but not a lot of the kids these days call them blueprints. They call them drawings.
Yeah, because blueprints was
like, I remember, I'm old enough to remember them actually holding blueprints, like the whole purpose of them.
Oh, right, the actual blueprints.
They don't exist anymore.
Well, they're archival, right? And
they
have a shitload more information on them
than
they do the drawings today, right?
I don't think I can say that I've probably looked ever at a blueprint.
I think if I've seen one or two in my day.
I've held them. They're a lot better than they were back then than they are today.
Sure.
What profession do you guys not want to do?
Not want to do. Oof.
Electrician.
Electrician?
Yeah.
Why not? Why not?
Because it's too dangerous.
Versus masonry and structural loads and underpinning?
Yeah, don't take me wrong.
You can't see the danger.
You can't see. And my stepfather died from an electrocution. He was electrocuted. He was on top of a pole. He got electrocuted with 20,000 volts. He was thrown about 100 feet and a few years died because he never healed from his injuries.
Yeah.
You know, my mom got full pension and everything from that. But you don't see it, man, and it creeps on you. I have a buddy, we were back home. In, you know, your hometown, Magdalena.
Yeah.
We're building a slab on the top, and he grabbed a rebar to swing it, to put it. The rebar passed too close. The light got into his hand and came out to his foot. A hole in his hand, a hole in his foot. Stop his heart, had to be defibrillated, almost died.
Wow.
Hell no. I can't see the danger. If I can see the danger, I can
stop it. No, I know. I'm the same way. What's yours, Ken?
It's plumber, man. Plumber, like new plumbing, I love. I'll do
tying into old existing.
Oh, fuck that, man!
Clay pipe?
No way. working with shit and around shit is just something that I'll pass.
Last question: if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Oof, darling, come to me.
Build me a gazebo.
Yeah. I like that one.
There you go.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show, man, making the time. Thank you. Taking the day off work and giving the guys a bit of a day off, I guess. But everything's back to normal on Monday, huh?
They work hard this week, you know. Digging the underpinning, like, and then
they deserved it.
They deserve the day off. Yesterday we worked until like 6:30.
Yeah.
Oh, you got like 9.5 hour day yesterday. So in the rain, like they were in and out of the house.
It's been a shitty spring so far. Well, it's been a typical spring. A lot of water.
It's April, right? April showers, May flowers. So,
gentlemen, thank you so much. That's it. We're all done. Thank you very much. Anything right here.